Wendy and Alana's podcast. Wendy and Alana's podcast. Get literary, get
All right. Hello and welcome to the Alana and Wendy's Totally Excellent Get Literary podcast. This is Series 1, Episode 1, Part 1 of our vaguely romance-focused book club focused on us two people. Us two humans. My name is Lana, and I'm one of your hosts today. Today we're discussing Shades of Milk and Honey, among other things. Wendy, how are you feeling?
I'm pretty good. I've got a little bit of a cold, but I'm here doing it.
Excellent. And you were eating biscuits, right, at this moment?
Yes, I was eating biscuits. An exciting Sunday afternoon. Eating biscuits and recording a podcast.
Eating biscuits and recording a podcast. Okay, so this is the first of our literary-focused book club that we decided to record as a podcast. I thought for first we decided to call this the Wendy and Alana Get Lit. So we have drinks. So Wendy, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Negroni, which is just like signature drink. It's not related at all to what we read, but it's just what I have. It's two parts gin, one part Campari, and one part red vermouth. Very excellent.
Sounds excellent. I am drinking a signature cocktail I made for this event. It's just as overcomplicated as it sounds. And it's named after something from the book called the Tableau Vivante, which I think is how you say that. And it's two part gin, one part peach schnapps from my friends Mateus and Lumi. Thank you guys. It's delicious. And it's got a bunch of soda, water, and ginger ale in it. And a maraschino cherry. So I'll put the recipe up. I'll give it to Wendy and she'll put it up on her blog. So to get started, Wendy, you should tell us how we met. How did we meet, Wendy?
Well, once upon a time, many a year ago, we were both at Girl Scout camp.
Girl Scout camp!
And I've never lived in the same state as Lana. That's a friendship. Because when we were in camp, I was from Oregon. She lived in Seattle. And then we've just never crossed paths in the same state. Now I live in Little Rock, Arkansas. She lives in Lafayette, Indiana. So yeah. We're like kind of closer.
Yeah, we're being always closer. Yeah, so we spent 6 weeks together at Girl Scout camp when, in 2003.
Jesus, so long ago.
And in the preceding, like, 16 years, we have pretty much never lived in the same state. But we've remained friends throughout that period, actually. Which is kind
when
of...
When I met Alana, I used to call her my cardboard box friend. Because I feel like if we were in a cardboard box together, we would be able to entertain each other. Like, we don't need anything else.
It's totally true. Like, at the time, like, people were like, you know, like, as soon as you guys made friends, it was like, of course they're going to be friends. I think when it... When I showed up with my typewriter, like, I think we were just destined to be great friends.
Instant friends. That girl with the typewriter. I'm going to hang out with her.
Well, anyway, so the thing also is whenever we go for walks, we tend to call each other on our cell phones. And so So Wendy, you do kind of literary and creative challenges, and so we thought that we'd create a podcast together to as sort of a challenge for both of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're doing. So So before we start the book, the first we want to do is talk about a little bit more about what else we've read in the last couple of weeks. So Wendy, what else have you been reading?
Oh God, I read audiobooks at work while I'm doing work. For some reason, that works for me. So I usually like go through a lot of books, and I just read like the trashiest romance novels. All the time. and I have a blog about it. It's called GwenWendy.com. Because my real name is Gwendolyn. And I just write about each book that I've read that week. So last week, I've been finishing up on Jennifer Ashley's Shifters Unbound series. Which is about shapeshifters. Yay. They just do all sorts of weird stuff. Right now I'm reading Mate Bond, which is like, I picked it up earlier and I really didn't like it. And then I put it back down. And then now that I'm like running out of other Shifters Unbound books to read, now I'm picking it up again and I still don't like it. But it's like about like a marriage of convenience between these two lupine shifters. And the funny thing about that series is that shifters have like a mate bond, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like they immediately fall in love and then they can never be separated. Of course. Oh, that's cool. What happens. And this one was like these two have had a marriage of convenience to like bring together like other packs, but they haven't had that mate bond. But they like love each other. Like I don't really know what the problem is. They have a kid together. They're like faithful to each other. Like just because you don't have like some magical mystical mate bond thing doesn't mean that you have to like. Sad about it.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm reading right now.
it sounds like, man, we're like really happy, but like not, you know,
yeah.
We're going to be emo about it.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, we just love each other. Just like humans do, like all the time. Like we don't have no magical, mystical mate bond that you feel physically. And then you like know when your mate is like in trouble or whatever. Like we don't have that. And we're fine.
We're fine.
Okay with normal love. It's fine.
that is like the most unromance thing. Like we have normal love and it's fine.
It fucking sucks. So that's what I'm reading right now. What about you?
Right now I am about halfway through a Michael Chabon book called The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay.
Oh, I've heard of that.
And I'm reading it for another book club I do, and it is like, I will probably still be reading it next time we do book club because it's like 700 pages. But I am really enjoying it. I'm not enjoying it as much as I liked The Yiddish Policeman's Union, which is another one that I read. But it takes place, it's one of those Jews during World War II in America books. Well, I don't know. I feel like it's a genre because I'm reading another book called The Plot Against America, which is basically also about Jews in America during World War II. And so it's very confusing because one is like alternative history and the other one isn't, but sort of. It's anyway, there's all sorts of kooky things that happen. Michael Chabon is really good at writing genre fiction, and I love him for it because every one of his books is, I think, kooky. I also just finished, what did I just finish? I just finished Hidden Figures. I read Hidden Figures. Wasn't that good. Did not like it as much as the movie, which is a terrible thing to say. I'm sorry to everyone.
Oh no!
I know!
You don't for that.
I liked it, but I felt like it didn't really hold together, and it wasn't edited very well. But I did have the chance to meet the author at one point, who was very lovely. So I highly recommend meeting the author and also watching the movie.
Not reading the book.
Not reading the book.
I recommend doing other things than reading the book.
Okay, the third book I read recently, which I finished yesterday, is called it's a series of essays. It's called The Impossible Will Take a Little While, Perseverance and Hope in Troubled Times, edited by Paul Rogart Loeb. And I really enjoyed it. It was 400 pages of essays, but he chose some really nice ones. It was just like, it's like stories from activists about how you should have hope even if things are looking sort of troubled. And it was supposed to be about global warming at the time. And it's like, so it's got like letters from a Birmingham jail from Martin Luther King, and it's got like stuff from Rosa Parks and about Rosa Parks, and it's got Desmond Tutu, and it's got Nelson Mandela, stuff like that.
Cool.
Yeah, and it was good. I read it in little bits, and I'm glad I did, because it was like, I think if you read it all in one sitting, I think you'd be like, this is way too sappy. But if you read it in little bits, you're like, man, it's playing my song.
It's funny that there's some books out there that you don't want to read, like, all in one sitting.
Yeah, I think that there are definitely books like that, that, like, if you read them all at once, it's just, like, too much.
Yeah.
You want to read it in, like, little chapters. I wonder if authors have feelings about how their book should be read, like in what setting and at what interval.
Oh. Well, I always think about that with like the classics because, you know, like all those like multi-volume novels used to come out per volume. Like it was kind of like a TV show, you know.
Yeah, it was like serialized.
Yeah, you didn't read like, you wouldn't have read, like, all of Vanity Fair at the same time. Or, like, I think Dickens has a lot of books like that. So, like, people get, like, burnt out by classics because they sit down and they try to read the whole book. But really, you should treat it like a TV show. You should read it one volume each and then move on to something else and maybe come back.
Yeah. I wonder if, like, if classic authors would like their books to be read in school. Because I feel like, lately some authors are like, oh, that's not what I intended with that book. You know, like the whole idea, when you're in, like, ninth grade English class, everything is about, like, symbolism. Like, everything is supposed to represent something else. And I don't know if everything is entirely symbolic all the time.
No. They probably hate
it. Like, I remember reading Lord of the Flies, and every aspect of it, like, we were analyzing the colors that he used.
Mm.
And I was like, I don't know if these, I think sometimes these, it was just a pink conch shell, you know? I don't think pink has any particular meaning here.
Yeah. Well, at some point, it's out of their hands.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter what they decided.
Anyway, that's what I read. I guess now we'll move to the main event, which is we read Shades of Milk and Honey, which is by, let me look it up, by Mary Robinette Kowal. And it's the beginning of a series.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the Glamorous Histories number one. And some people have told me that the books, they people say the series is really good. And you suggested this, but I have had this on my to-read list, as I mentioned when you mentioned it, since 2014. So technically, I suggested it by putting on my Goodreads in 2014.
All right. You win. You're the cooler one. I love how you looked up when you put it on your to-read list.
Originally, my suggestion in forever. But where did you hear about this book, Wendy?
I've heard about it from a couple different people because it kind of like puts together all of my loves, which are Jane Austen, modern romance novels that are set in historical times, and also magic. Just like any kind of like whimsical anything. And so I've heard it from Book Riot. I've heard it from my sister Katie, who heard it from her friend, who also talked to me about it. You know, there's a lot of people who are like, hey, you like Jane Austen and also magic. This is Jane Austen plus magic. And I was like, sweet.
Like they were like Amazon recommending you based on your interest in magic. Yeah. And you know, Jane Austen, we recommend.
Yes. And it was almost like, in reading the book, it was almost exactly Jane Austen plus magic. Which sounds funny. Like, it really is as advertised.
Yeah, I had heard about this, too, as being, like, one of those, like, good renderings of Jane Austen that people just always talk about when, like, people want to read more Jane Austen, but they don't actually want to read, like, more period, like, literary work. They want to read, like, something that sort of tastes like Jane Austen, but is not necessarily, like, hundreds of pages. And, like, they don't want to read the Brontes.
Oh, the Brontes. I love the Brontes.
I know you love the Brontes.
So I'm an English major, and I love Jane Austen, and I love the classics. And I've read, like, early English novels a lot, and, you know, the Victorian authors, all that kind of stuff. So I don't necessarily need that aspect of this book, like, the whole, like, read Jane Austen but not have to deal with Jane Austen kind of thing. I love Jane Austen. I love dealing with her. But you start us off. How did you like the book?
I liked it. I felt like it read easily. I also liked the fact that it wasn't immediately obvious who she would end up with. Because she has this thing for St. Vincent. By the way, spoilers now. She has this thing for, like...
You almost said his name and then you're like, spoilers. that's like... And then he says, Rosebud, I mean... Spoilers about...
I mean, Darth Vader is Luke's father. Oh, wait, spoiler alert. Sorry, guys. Yeah. Well, deal with it. Like, Vincent seems like he ended up being, like, the real love interest or whatever. But it felt like, for a while, like, the other dude, what's his name? Best brother, Mr. Ellsworth, right? No.
Ellsworth?
No, Ellsworth's the parent last name.
Yeah, that dude.
That one dude.
That dude who, like, dueled someone.
Yeah, he just dueled them.
Who would actually duel in Jane Austen times? Like, who are you? And I love how he was, like, supposed to be, like, the good, nice, kind, sensible brother. But then he, like, killed someone in a duel.
Yeah, Dunkirk. Dunkirk is his name. It's like, he's just a fucking serial killer. Like, he just wants to go around, like, killing people for reasons.
Bullshit honor thing.
Bullshit honor. Anyway, I didn't like it. Also, Melody was a little bit unbelievable in that she was such a bitch.
She was such a bitch.
Oh, my God. You're just like, shut the fuck up. Man.
Also, Beth was a bitch. Those girls were bitches. Both of them, I was like, none of you have redeemable qualities.
There's a lot of ladies that weren't very redeemable because her mom was also a bitch. Like, all the women were bitches in this book except for Jane.
Yeah. Jane was a pushover.
Yeah. But like, Beth, I just wanted to be like, you're not going to see this coming again, Beth? Like... Like, really? You're going to do this again? Like, this happened when you're 14, and you can't be, like, over, like, 19 right now. So, like, in the course of like, the amount of time it takes someone to, like, complete college, you've completely forgotten the fact that, like, you know, you've been through this once before.
Yeah. Also, like, Jane was always like, but, like, my sister's being a bitch right now. But she's nice. Like, she's nice to me, and I love her. And then Beth's being a bitch right now. But she's nice. I was like, don't do it. You just got the shit stick as far as, like, you know, people that you hang out with. In this small ass town, you have the option of your bitchy sister or your bitchy next door neighbor.
I mean, like, no wonder you spend all your time basically doing the equivalent of magical needlepoint.
Yeah, which was awesome, by the way. That was my favorite part of the book, was the magic.
Yeah, the magic was interesting in that it was very intricate and it had clear rules.
Yeah.
I liked that it had rules, like, that you couldn't just suddenly be super good at it.
Yeah. And it, I mean, like, usually magic is written as far as, like, you know, it's kind of like a band-aid for all the things that you can't do in the real world, you know. And it just kind of is used for whatever purpose. And, you know, there's, like, witches. Like, it's interesting to me because, like, instead of, like, for instance, in other books where there's witches and that kind of stuff, it's like magic is just this thing, and then people manipulate it to their will, and they come up with all these, like, purpose-driven things, you know? But in this book, it was like magic is, like, a certain thing that you can do something with, but that's what you can do, you know? Like, it's not like you, like, look at a piano and you say, okay, now I'm gonna, like, solve all these problems with the piano. No. A piano is there for playing. So you play the piano. You can't, like, also, like, draw with the piano.
Yeah, like, it seemed like the magic, like, wasn't suddenly gonna, like, it's not this magical X thing that can do anything it wants. Like, it exists inside of, like, some sort of time and space. And purpose. Like, most of what they did with magic is not, like, did not seem necessarily to change the social order around it. Mm-hmm. Like, it was more either, like, entertainment or, like, you know, a little bit of kind of trickery.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Though when they introduced the idea that Mr. Vincent could, like, make things invisible, I'm like, this is gonna fucking come up again. I can tell. Like, this is way cooler than anything else that he's done with it. Like, they're like, oh yeah, and by the way, he can make things invisible. And I'm like, really? That seems a little bit, like, overpowered. At this moment, that's gonna come up later.
Yeah, that seems like an actual useful skill.
Yeah.
It's funny, like, the magic is, like, treated as an accomplishment in higher societies in this book. Like, you know, a girl will learn the piano and then also learn how to glamour. And it really is only glamour, too. Like, it's only illusions and glamour.
Yeah, because you would have thought, like, there was some illusion at aspects, like, they said they might use it in war, but we didn't actually see that happen in the story.
Because Jane Austen doesn't give a shit about war.
No. Jane Austen is all about the inter-village drama.
Yeah.
That's what she...
All the time.
All the time. She's just, like, it's not, like, important to the story. Yeah, I liked the magic too. I thought it was a nice addition to the story.
And the way she describes it too, with, like, just pulling from the ether and then, like, twisting light and drawing it and, you know, that kind of stuff, like, that was really cool.
Yeah, I really liked that too. I did wish that it wasn't, like, a lot of these issues that everyone has are, like, straight out of Pride and Prejudice. And so it felt like, at times, a little bit too Jane Austen. Like, you know, as soon as the military guy showed up, the player, I was like, oh my god, this is totally, who's the guy in Pride and Prejudice?
Wickham.
Yeah, it's totally Wickham.
Straight up Wickham.
Yeah.
There's like not any variation from Wickham.
Yeah.
Like it's not like he's like, he also has a different personality. No, it's just straight up Wickham.
Yeah, he even showed up like in a military uniform like Wickham does.
Yeah, and then didn't he hit on Jade first?
I think he did. He might have. Well, because...
Oh, no, wait, no, because he actually was a combination of Wickham and Willoughby, because remember how Jane's sister, like, pretended to twist her ankle, and then, what's his name, picked her up?
Yeah.
Like, took her aside. And then it turns out she wasn't really hurt.
Yeah.
What a bitch. Yeah, he was basically a combination of all of the assholes from Jane Austen's novels.
Like, he was just an amalgamation of all of them together. Yeah, I liked it. I did feel like it was, like, Jane Austen is a little bit cattier than this lady was.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the sarcasm, the, like, crippling Jane Austen sarcasm was not there.
I don't know. I kind of liked it. I was meh about it.
Yeah. Do you think you'll read the rest of the series?
No.
Yeah.
But also, like, don't you think the rest of the series will be completely different from this book?
Well, yeah. I was thinking that, like, does... I don't know. I mean, other people might know, but, like, does it follow different people? Because it seems like it'd be really boring if it just followed the same person.
I looked up the synopsis. And it follows the same people. It follows Jane and Vincent.
Oh.
And they're, like, married, and they're, like, traveling glamorous. Which I think is super weird. Basically, this book was just Jane Austen. Like, she just takes, like, all of Jane Austen and then does this, like, remix. And, like, pulls all these other characters together. But, like, Jane Austen doesn't do anything past marriage, so... What are the next books going to be?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they might even be better because they wouldn't be leaning against the whole Jane Austen.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, you could kind of develop the characters a little bit more in the world. Because theoretically, they go around and they do their glamorous thing, right? So you can develop the sort of magical part of it.
As a person as well-versed in Jane Austen, I was just like, oh, here comes Wickham. All right, now he's Willoughby. Okay, look how that guy's Edmund. All right, now he's Mr. Crawford. I mean, the cool parts about Jane Austen are, to me, like the way that she just, it's the observations on manners. So the way that she just, like, cuts through human psychology and just, like, gets down to the very core of someone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the sarcasm and the, like, the making of, like, certain character types where it's, like, you look at that person and you're like, oh my god, I know someone like that. <You know? laughs> And that wasn't there, you know, which is fine. I'm not expecting her to write like Jane Austen.
Yeah.
But it was strange to me that it was, like, really just Jane Austen.
Yeah, just like the style and the character, but not necessarily the depth.
And then they, but it was like, it was kind of like YA Jane Austen. Because Jane was like, she's not an adult, really. She was just kind of like wandering around waiting to be recognized for how cool she is. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I love how, like, Mr. Vincent is, like, the only one who doesn't make any sense in this book. Everybody else is, like, so Jane Austen. And so, like, you know, oh, sir, please help me. They're, like, tea parties and they're crumpets and running around and holding each other's arms and doing morning calls and that kind of stuff. Like, everything about that was, like, Jane Austen stuff. And then, like, Mr. Vincent in the background is just, like, being a big old angry blotch. Like, just like everything happening in the foreground is Jane Austen, and then it's just like a big angry blotch just like seething in the corner. And Mr. Vincent is totally like a Bronte character. Like, he's Byronic. Because he's like big and dark and he doesn't speak a lot and he's like angry at her a lot. Like, most of the time she's like, what's up with that dude?
Like, they'll be having like a great time like making art and like picking strawberries, and this, and Vincent will be like, I hate you all. And she'd be like, what's up with that dude? I thought we were having a good time.
Yeah, why do you have to be such a downer? Because it's from a Bronte book, that's why.
Yeah. Like, have some more fucking strawberries.
Yeah. Calm the fuck down. And he was like mad at her for being better at him. But then somehow he decided to make her his muse.
Yeah, well, it was also like, if you're into a girl, you should write an entire journal book about your feelings and then just give it to her.
That's so emo. He's like listening to Dashboard Confessionals and writing in his journal. Him saying no one understands.
Like, you just gotta be like secretly sketching 1,000 pictures of her.
That's super weird.
Don't do
that.
That's
creepy.
No.
And also, like, so the thing is that he is in love with her for unexplainable reasons, and then she thinks that he hates her. And then she finds out that he loves her, and then she's like, oh yeah, also I love him. Well, so, like, you were not okay with him for a long time, but suddenly, because he loved you, you're like, oh yeah, okay, I'm into that.
Yeah, and I don't remember at any point her, like, having that realization. It was such bullshit, like, oh, this dude, like, kind of likes me. Cool. I guess I love him too. Like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Also, like, I mean, that's also another issue, because, like, Jane Austen came upon in a time where people were, like, generally recently becoming okay with love matches. And so, like, the Jane Austen novels are, like, essentially, like, you know, giving you pointers on how to figure out who is a good person. Because it's really fucking hard to make one decision that will affect your entire life, you know, like,
yeah.
And you don't go off on a whim and marry someone. And that's why all of those, like, really charismatic characters are also distrustful, because you don't just like, oh, he's cute, I'll marry him. So, like, this book is like the exact opposite. He's just, like, seething in the background and being a dick most of the time. His redeeming quality is the fact that he's good at magic, and then she's kind of better. Also, I don't think that a professional glamorous would, like, a guy who is obviously wrapped up in his own professionalism, and then she comes along and then does something as good or better. I don't think he would be like, okay, now I love her. I think the first part was true, where he was like, that bitch.
Well, and it wasn't even like she was just copying him, right? Like, he spent a bunch of time figuring out how to do it. Like, I'd be like, well, aren't you special?
Now I love her.
Like, every single time, like, some chick corrects your grammar, you're suddenly like, no, I love her.
Yeah. That thing that I've been spending my entire life working on. Yeah. You just did it. Okay. I love you.
Okay. I love you. Thanks.
Do you think you're going to read the other book?
I don't think I will. I didn't really feel like... I liked how everything was sort of tied up at the end, and so I don't feel like I need to read the next book.
Yeah.
Mostly because all the side characters were such assholes, I don't really think I'd want to know their story either.
It's not about the side characters.
I know. But... Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is like... Like, there wasn't... I didn't really necessarily care about their glamorous life, because it seems like it just is, like, they get to be well-known. And it's so nicely tied up, because we also find out that, like, Melody finds a love, you know, a match and stuff like that.
She doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
She's a bitch.
Well, that's the thing I didn't like about this book, is all the women are such bitches. Like, can you make women who, like, just like each other, who are just friends? Like, man...
Also, like, I mean, I don't feel particularly interested in reading the next books because also Vincent is not a character.
Yeah, he doesn't...
There's really nothing that he does.
Yeah, I mean, most of the story involves that other guy, Dunkirk, who I found more interesting.
Yeah.
And I was hoping that Melody would end up with Dunkirk.
Who does Dunkirk end up with? No one?
I guess no one.
It's a little odd.
Maybe he just, you know, becomes a professional serial killer.
Challenges everybody to duel.
He just, you know, just becomes a duel dude, you know? Like you do.
I love duels. I love them happening in Regency romance novels. But also, it's like, they didn't, I mean, like, Gene oftentimes just didn't really happen. Like, it wasn't a thing. Like, it was a thing maybe in, like, the ton, like, the, you know, like, the higher echelons of a society. But it wasn't a thing in, like, you know, a clergyman's daughter and,
yeah.
And, like, just, like, a gentleman farmer. Like, they're not challenging each other to duels. That's why it's so funny and Pride and Prejudice, where, like, Lydia runs off and then Mrs. Bennet is just going, I'm certain that Mr. Bennet is going to challenge him to a duel and then he will die and then we'll be thrown out of the house. And then Elizabeth's like, God, no. It's not gonna happen. It's so stupid.
I love that idea, though, of Mr. Bennet, like, dueling.
Yeah, he would so not be good at it.
Yeah. He'd like raise his guns and be like, never mind, guys, I'm going back to my study. No way.
Gonna hang out.
Yeah. Alright, okay. So I think we've kind of covered the book a little bit. So it's now time for Wendy's rant.
Okay. And it's kind of related to the book we read.
No.
Because I'm trying to compile a list of basic truths for romance novels. And the first one I thought of is, it's not stalking if he's sexy.
PM.
Because some old dude following you around and saying, I've been watching you all night, every night. It's not okay. But some young dude, like 6'2", and drive and works out every day. I've been watching you every night. You're like, ooh.
Ooh, tell me more.
Talk me some more.
Like, what have you seen? Have you sketched me at all?
Have you sketched me? Please give me a book. With all your, like, drawings in it of you being creepy. there's this book that I was reading that is an audiobook that's called Heart-Shaped Hack. And it went far beyond the label of normal, it's not stalking if it's sexy. Like, it was just way too close to home to being like, okay, now, this is just actually creepy. So, it's about this girl who's an executive director for a failing nonprofit. And she goes on on TV in a short skirt and says, please give me money. And so this guy shows up with a bag of money. A bag of it.
A bag of money, because that's what millionaires have, is just bags of money.
Well, like a paper bag. Because he is a hacker, and he steals from people, like bad hackers. So he just has money laying around. And so he just gave her money. And then she's like, oh, I like you. And then he, like, the next time they meet, he has hacked into her computer, read all of her files, read her search history, hacked into her dating site, changed her dating site so that she looks, like, really ugly so that guys won't hit on her. And then also hacks into her Victoria's Secret account and buys her stuff that was sitting in her cart waiting to be bought. That's creepy!
That is creepy! Who does that?
Who does that? And she was like, that's creepy, dude. But also then just kept on hanging out with him.
Like, no, that's not step two. Step one is, like, that's creepy, dude. Step two is you leave.
Leave. Get a restraining order.
Yeah, like, that's not what would happen. I don't even like it. Like, when I get things in my own, like, queue. You know, they're in the queue for a reason. Respect the queue.
Yeah.
That's the part that pisses me off the most out of all of the things.
Because the Q.
Yeah.
It's you. Yeah. True. It's in a Q for the reason that you didn't want to buy it yet. That's why.
Yeah, that's like, respect my choices. Man.
Yeah, it's super creepy. It's easy to get around the creep factor if they're, like, a 100-year-old vampire or something. I mean, like, I give more leeway to vampires because it's like, you're a vampire, you don't know social cues. Like, maybe you think that it's okay to come into somebody's house and watch them sleeping. Maybe, you know, like, maybe... You know it's not okay, but you think you're above it because you're a vampire. I mean, that kind of makes sense, too. But this is just a dude. He's just a regular human dude. And he's getting up into her search history. Like, so weird. And then like, the rest of the book that I read, I only got through, like, half of it. He keeps on doing stuff like that, of course, because he has no boundaries. And also, he won't tell her anything about himself. He won't tell her his last name. And so she's like, I'm dating this new wonderful guy. And then they go, what's his name? John what?
Cricket.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Who dates someone for a month and then still doesn't know their last name?
Man, that is intense.
This is a ridiculous book. I stopped it.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's also... Okay, so vampires are allowed to be, like, a little bit creepy, but I feel like that's a lot of, like, the Twilight thing. It's just, like... Like, let's just be serious. Watching someone sleep is just not cool. Like, for anybody. Like, don't be watching people sleep. It's creepy.
Yeah, for, like, hours.
Yeah, for hours.
And you're also, like, that's your hobby. Like, that's not, like, it's not like you wake up next to them and then, like, look at them sleeping for, like, a second. It's like, he's like, what should I do today? Should I, like, read a book? Should I play my piano? Should I run up trees and stuff? No, I should just stand in a corner and watch her sleep. That's super weird, guys.
Super weird.
Yeah. But there's a lot of stuff like that in romance novels where it's like, why are you following her? Why? Why are you doing this? You know, they always, like, follow the girl to some place and then inevitably she gets hurt, or somebody tries to steal money from her, or try to rape her or something. And then he, like, comes in and saves the day, and it's like, why were you following me in the first place, dude?
Yeah. Totally creepy. Awesome. Good rant.
Excellent.
So, our next book club will be, we are going to read The Madness of Lord Ian McKenzie.
Hooray!
Which is a bodice ripper Highlander romance that okay. involves someone who is quote unquote autistic.
Yeah, he's quote unquote mad. But he's like vague, nebulous, Victorian autistic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like vague, like conveniently mad. Like, yeah. Like, it has all the convenience of it. Like,
none of the drawbacks.
Like, it's like, I have this terrible disease in which I only love you, and also I make a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
I wish it was contagious. If only. Oh, man.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
I love Jennifer,
actually. Cool. So, I think this is the end of our book club pretty soon. Any parting thoughts from Wendy?
If someone gives you a book with a whole bunch of pictures of you in it, go for it. That's the answer. Marry that man now.
Marry that man.
Yeah. Get it official. Put a ring on it. Maybe he never talked to you before this, but now, oh shit.
Oh shit.
That's great.
Okay, this has been Wendy and Alana Get Literary, a podcast hobby of Wendy and Alana. So tune in next time when we talk about The Madness of Lord Ian McKenzie and whatever else we want to talk about at that point.
Oh, and go to my website, GwenWendy.com.
Yes, we're going to be posting this on GwenWendy.com and see also additional blog posts from Wendy as well as the cocktail recipe for the Tableau Vivant.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! And
all right, awesome!
Awesome!